Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Some of you I know are living your cognitive rampage. I know I am. Try to, right? Push it. Don't try. Fuck it. Just do it. Did I just go Nike there? I think I just went Nike there. You know the things I got to remind you about when we first start, but I'm opening up with this one. Drink my co-tea. Drink my co-tea. Go to drinkmyco-tea.com. Alfred, my people, love them. Drink that stuff. Keeps you good, keeps you healthy, clean water, mushroom, probiotics, that whole nine, right? Be on the lookout, though. Cognitive Rampage is going to be dropping something very shortly that you'll be able to get some of the coolest medicines from all over the world. Natural holistic medicines coming. It's coming on the Cognitive Rampage. We're going to have a whole store of it. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be awesome. The second edition of the Cognitive Rampage. We already know it. Since we're watching and we're live, if you have the first edition, please, 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 please email me. Email me Cognitive Rampage Podcast, little picture proof of it. I will email you a free electronic copy of the second edition that comes out January 31st. I'm so fucking excited about this book. Oh, my God. It's a theory, right? It's my transrational structure behavior theory. So like any true science or theory, it needs to be revisited. It needs to be revisited. It needs to be refined. It needs to be visited, right? It just checked all the time, in my opinion. So in that opinion, being its theoretical approach, well, I know it only came out last April, but I read through it and I found some enforcement of my own beliefs. I found some irrational structuring and some biases that were included in the book. I found some holy shit, where did I squirrel off to, where I was writing and I just imagine that went somewhere. But yeah, so I mean, chapter 15 is all but gone. I'm really looking forward to it. New book cover, new everything, love a new trailer soon. And the audio book is going to come out just about after that. I read the audio book. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I wanted to read my own book. And in the audio book, there's some side notes and stuff too, to where it's almost like a podcast where I kind of tell you where my thinking was then and there. So you may or may not like that anyway, but you'll be able to get the audiobook on adamlowry.com, cognitiverampage.com. You'll download it directly from us. The second edition of the book will be Kindle, Amazon, everywhere else. So again, please, I want to get you that free copy. Please, please, please. If you bought the first one, tell somebody that bought it. I don't know. I know out of the, got a lot of emails, but I know there's a lot more. So I want to make sure I really get everybody back. Dollar Mental Health Club, that's coming out in March as well. Loving that. It's coming together. If you want to be a mental trainer at Dollar Mental Health Club, email your resume, et cetera. I'll email you back how we're doing the interviews and all that stuff. So you don't have to live here. So you don't have to live here. You don't come to the office. It's not like that. You can do it virtually if you want to be a mental trainer. So email dollarmentalhealthclub actually at gmail.com. Your resume, and I'll let you know where we are, where we're getting to with that in March. So much stuff. I think that's it. Drink my co-tea, the book, etc. Okay. So this spawned in me, this topic, and wanting to discuss it for a long time. I've wanted to talk about mental health. You know, why I chose not to be a licensed therapist, why I chose not to open up a practice and follow suit, why I left treating addiction, why I walked away, and kind of maybe I'm going to stem it off of my interview on Joe Rogan. I'm only saying that because, well, I used a lot of generalizations. You know, I was seriously, seriously nervous, very fucking scared. I met the dude 24 hours ahead of time. And I just want to get the message out there, right, of what was really happening, of what I had saw. And I made some generalizations there that weren't accurate, et cetera. Well, not exactly accurate, right? So I want to walk in with telling you about what my experience was and what I saw. And this would stem usually from a question that I actually got, which was someone asked me, you know, why wouldn't you open up your own practice, right? Why aren't you a licensed therapist? Why wouldn't you do that? And then it came out, and then the Cognitive Rampage came out on the phone, and I realized, man, you know, I got to tell the story. And then I listened to Joe Rogan's podcast with Dr. Rhonda Patrick a couple days ago. Brilliant, brilliant woman. She's actually quoted in the book too. She's still in the book too, in the second edition. Just a hell of a competence creator is what I call her in that new chapter. But anyway, I was listening to that show. And I listened to Dr. Rhonda Patrick say that she was so amazed and blown away about what she had discovered about the DSM. For those of you that don't know what the DSM is, it is the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, essentially the diagnosis Bible, if you will. So psychologists, psychiatrists, etc., refer to the DSM as where to find a diagnosis. You can see criterium, you know, symptomatic behavior, etc. You got to match certain criteria, etc. Basically, it's what they use. It's like this thick. It's fucking huge. And the DSM has been revised many, many times. 1, 2, 3, 4. So she happens to mention that she was just blown away on how what she had discovered that the DSM-2 had been rewritten about the time that antidepressants were coming along with a certain test. And the word that she was looking for, she was trying to say spectrums. She said they widened the diagnosis. They widened the spectrums. Dr. Anna Patrick, and trust me, she's way smarter than me. Trust me. So that's not her field, really. So, I mean, it's the minute she started talking molecular anything, I'm lost. So I just wanted to point out that the spectrums. So she's looking at the DSM-2, and they widen the spectrums of depression. And at the time, this diagnosis called major depressive disorder had emerged. And then links it to in her conversation on how amazing what this may do for pharmaceutical companies and selling, you know, prescription pills. I said, yeah, that's right. How about that? Yeah, imagine that. Well, then I look back and I said, man, back when I was on Rogan, what I was talking about was mental health in the whole spectrum. So what I had described is when they rewrote the DSM-4-TR, which is now the DSM-5, they didn't even really bring in the people that helped write the DSM-4. They changed the whole thing. 4 and 4TR, et cetera, they used to run off these axes, right? And they had these four axes. And these four axes would separate between personality disorder, mood disorder, then you get a GAF score, medical implications, et cetera. And it was fairly easy to use. It was good. I liked it myself. And there were some fans that didn't, right? You can go either way. So what I'm saying on the show is when they rewrote the DSM-5, they widened the spectrums of fucking everything, except they shortened the spectrums on childhood ADHD. Now, aren't they fucking nice? Because at the time, we all know it. We know it today. It still happens. They were overdiagnosing ADHD in children, etc. And everybody got pretty pissed about that. And even the non-users of the DSM-5 were upset about that. So they shorten that to keep everybody happy. Look, we're not out to get kids hooked, okay? We shorten that. And we dropped sex addiction and we dropped Asperger's as diagnosis. So those aren't even diagnoses anymore. And they dropped the AXIS system. So they dropped the AXIS system and add these severity levels, right? To where it's mild, moderate, severe. And then they link it to traits. And so people now show traits of something on certain severity levels. Well, what they ended up doing was widening the spectrums on every mental health diagnosis except childhood ADHD. And this intertwined with my addiction that I was discussing. So at the time, explaining this, that they've done this for every spectrum of every mental health diagnosis. And you may not know it, but you may have heard of bipolar 1. You may have even heard of bipolar 2. But there's also 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 on the way, in case you didn't know. So as they widen the spectrums of these diagnoses, serious diagnoses too, I might add, bipolar is very rare and very serious. But now, because it has a severity level of traits of implications, we can say that you're bipolar with mild traits of something, right? So the bipolar, so it becomes wider, more people got diagnosed, etc. Well, look what I was talking about. I called it chemical incarceration. That's what I dubbed it. I said, now my experience in the clinic, all I saw was trading one drug for another. I saw chemical incarceration. This is what I was explaining. And I was showing that it didn't matter whether your diagnosis was depression, like Dr. Rhonda Patrick found in Job, found to be so, holy shit. I told you. Right? And this was the DSM-2. So 7, I'm talking about the 5. And so when they widened all those spectrums of diagnosing, made every one of us almost available for a pill. Some sort of level of treatment of pharmaceutical intervention or pharmacology. Well, at the same time, people started noticing this opiate addiction, spreading, etc. Now, if you notice, at the same time you've seen opiate addiction spreading, you've seen more and more money dumped into mental health. Obama just did it like a couple months ago, put like $200 million. And I made a long, long blog post about how great, sounds good and gets points, but you're just investing in a broken system. In a system that's hurting people. It's not helping people. It's chemically incarcerating people. Sure, it helps some people. We can say that, all right? I'm not here to dance around the tiny little details of the outliers and those that it does help. I'm talking about the majority here. And that's the scary part, is the majority that it's not really helping. And they line this up with addiction. So the medical model of addiction treatment, right? The Florida model is what it's referred to, has been spreading. So at the time when I was on Joe Rogan, the Florida model was not quite yet in California. So it made it seem like it's just crazy Florida. Well, if you notice, now the opiate epidemic spreads, people are coming more aware. Well, the opiate epidemic is spreading in the states and the cities, mainly the states, that first adopt and implement the medical Florida model of addiction treatment. Coincidence? I don't fucking know. I'm just saying. So at the same time, I made generalizations about Suboxone for one, harm reduction treatment. It's not the same as heroin. It actually stops heroin from entering your system. You technically can't get high, you know, on Suboxone, which is what a lot of people commented. But I was generalizing to the point that it's still one drug for another, and it's not necessary. That you don't die from a heroin withdrawal. It feels bad, and taking Suboxone keeps that feeling of wanting to get the heroin away. But what I didn't say on Rogan is when people hear about ODs, they hear about deaths when it involves heroin especially, people then criminalize heroin as being the issue. Well, the real issue is the majority of OD deaths that happen because cross-mixing of drugs, where somebody has taken fentanyl and something else. Somebody is on Suboxone and shoots heroin. That's the problem, is when you're on Suboxone and then you also ingest heroin or an opiate, you risk death. Or at least OD. So for me, talking about how they were one and the same, I was wrong. I was generalizing in context of the conversation. I mean, I said the word modality and all of a sudden I was a dick. And the truth was, I was pointing out, look, it's not a disease because of this and this and this. If we continue to treat it as such, it falls into it. Everything placates into the purpose of chemical incarceration, whether the system was designed this way or not, or whether the system was designed and then had faulty places where doctors and patients, et cetera, took advantage of it and it morphed into this over laws. That's beside the point. The point is that it's broken. And so, for me, approaching the mental health, I want to take you back. When my life was doing what it was doing, you can buy the book and fucking read about the little thing. I'm not going to tell you my whole story, but when I came back and I wanted to become a mental health counselor, I looked up what it took and I went that way. So I put it through, you know, I busted my ass, man. And as I came out, before I even graduated, actually, we were interning, et cetera, and I got to do groups and things like that. And they actually hired me as a full-time therapist before I even graduated. I was that into it. Like I was fucking into it. I was coming up with my own programs. I was coming up with my own approaches, my own groups. I wasn't following what they were telling me to do. They were telling me to push the 12 steps. Go over this piece of paper, read it aloud in the group and share your fucking fit. No, man, this shit ain't helping people, right? And so I came into it like, aren't we here to fucking help and change people? And I ran into jaded counselors, medical directors that had given up. It wasn't about helping the people as much as it was making the money from the people and making sure no one got fined. And then I saw patients that weren't really getting help. And then I saw some that were abusing the help a lot. And so when I talked on Joe Rogan about they treated him like the Ritz-Carlton, allow me to tell you what I meant by that. What I meant by that is when I was working in these clinics ready to try to save the world only to be slapped in my face, what would happen is the medical directors are in charge basically of making, so, you know, the money, making it operate. They usually have doctors underneath them, you know, that are doing some things too, usually a medical director. But anyway, this guy ran the whole facility, so they got to make money. They got to keep it going, keep the numbers up, right? Well, when a patient had days, which was paying the facility. The patient knew that. And so the patient would basically complain to the heads, I want this. They told me to do this. I want to be in this group. I don't want to be with this person. I don't want to be here. And all they would do is threaten to leave. They would just threaten to walk out and leave. And to the front office, that meant money. And so they would screw up therapy and treatment by going, no, I'll just give them what they want. Just let's do this, right? But if you didn't have days and you wanted what you wanted, oh, you were lucky to stay another 24 hours. So what I meant by the Ritz-Carlton was it became whatever the patient wanted, needed, and saw therapeutically important. And so I'm watching it abused from both sides. And I thought it was just a minority. And where I was a majority. It fucking killed me. I mean, it destroyed me. It really did. When I came in, like, we know we got to help people. We got to, you know, get in, and then you're restricted. You can't say this. You can't do that. Meanwhile, this is a mom who's got three kids who's can't stop ODing, but all I can do is tell her to declare yourself powerless, talk yourself in the mirror, and take this bus to this halfway house and these seven pills. I mean, that's all we had. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck? Now, this is after taking on $70,000+ in student loans to try to get this degree to help people. And you sit there. Yeah, you know what you sign up for. But even when you think about it, you go, man, I came to learn to help, to save, and, you know, work with others and shit. And fuck, you got to pay for that kind of money to help people. Then you get out and you realize the system's rigged against everybody. And the counselors can't say shit because they lose their job. They're trying to really help people. Then over years, it's hard for them to care. You know, patients who really are looking for help and they're just being handed 12 steps and some other things. I'm not anti 12 steps either. There's needed to be more. There was just give them more. There was so much out there and it's so restricted. I mean, it's not even when you process it. I mean, insurance sets the 30-day, 60-day mark. There's no therapeutic basis behind this shit at all. Political people were given more money and given more money, and people were getting rich and people were dying. You know, this is how it was. This is what I walked into. So when people ask me, how come you're not, you know, licensed and have your own practice and see people individually? Well, this is how it works. First, you go to school and you got to get a master's degree. You get a master's degree in mental health counseling, get a master's degree in social work, right? So as you get this master's degree, God knows what that costs you. It takes on the average about 3 years. You put 3 years in. Sometimes you got longer if you got kids and other shit you're fucking with. So it takes you about X amount of time. Now, within those 3 years, you take all these classes. Within that last year, you're going to do some internship, okay? Now, you're going to go to some clinic. Now, more than likely, generally 80 to 90% of the places you're going to do the intern is what's called a dual diagnosis facility. People get rehabs and mental health wards mixed up. Dual diagnosis means that you have a mental health diagnosis of some kind, as well as addiction issues. So that's where I worked in a clinic. So in this recovery clinic, dual diagnosis facility, not a rehab per se. Now, most interns will have to intern at some place like this, some sort of clinic place, generally really hardcore diagnosis. You're talking full-on schizophrenia, schizoaffective, etc. You know, you can get some rare diagnosis and meet some amazing people, actually. But this is where you have to be. So working within the facility I just described, watching what you're watching, the way people are treated, the way they're, you know, called from sales at front. Listen to the rest of the Joe Rogan episode. I'm not going to go back there, but I went further about sales calls, et cetera. But you got to work there. And through your internship, well, obviously they don't pay you. And most of the time you're in school and your school was kind enough to set it up with them. But what you are actually providing, and not by law or not ethically, but what you're actually providing is a worker for that clinic, because you'll start doing biopsychosocials, intakes, et cetera, all the dirty work. And you'll learn a lot. It's a lot of learning. It's good for you. You should intern for 3 years while you read the books personally. But anyway, you'll go through that and your master's already cost you X, your time already cost you Y. And now you're doing a lot of hardcore work. And let's say they say, would you like a job? And you say, you know what? You're damn right. Because even after you get your master's, that's 3 years, you can't open up a practice yet. You have to get licensed. And to get licensed takes 2 years at a minimum. Minimum. You can't do it any faster, all right? You can only do it in the 2 years. And most people take longer. Well, to get that, you have to be what's called supervised. And you're supervised by your employer. So generally, if you're lucky, wherever you did your internship at, you may get lucky and pick up a part-time job working for them. You may get lucky. I was lucky enough to be hired as a full-time therapist before graduation. And then after you get your degree, you can become a registered mental health counselor or registered social worker. And with that, you begin to get your postmaster hours. All right. And I think right now it's 2,000, 1,500, something like that. It's a lot of fucking hours. So those hours, then you have to get. Well, the clinic knows you have to get those hours. The state forces you have to get those hours and pass their test, which is easy. But anyway, you get those hours. But in those 2 years, if you're lucky, and if you're lucky enough to continue to work in that clinic, here's what you can expect to be paid. $18 an hour. Mm-hmm. You're going to get $18, $18.50 an hour as a full-time registered mental health counselor. Now, you're going to work 50 hours a week guaranteed. Because they're understaffed, because they got to keep staff low, right? Keep the money high, staff low. They keep staff low. You're going to bust your ass, cross ethical caseload lines, work your ass off, see a lot of injustices. Try to keep it steady because now you need the job. You're going to stay treating people. And there's a lot of reward back there. You end up falling in love with the patients, man. And that's what I ended up doing is I would get so angry looking at the wonderful people, some working through, some not, some taking advantage. But then what they had to work with in a system was quite shitty. It was terrible. And yeah, it was terrible. I mean, they're telling you to take this pill and take that pill and try this pill. They're rolling fucking dice. It's educated dice, but it's still fucking dice. So as you're an intern, you can expect to make $18, $18.50 an hour. Now, you try to support a family on that. Good luck. Now, you can, but, you know, it's all right. I even talked to another female counselor who was in the business who they actually told her, well, it's okay that you make that kind of money because doesn't your spouse make most of the income anyway? Yeah. Yeah, that's what they told her. And she was blown away. So now you can choose to work for this clinic, and what they give you are those hours. So as you're working for them at a shit fucking rate, getting work like fucking crazy, working like 40, 50 hours easy. I mean, 40 is common. That's just common. 50, 60 sometimes. And you can't take work home with you. That's technically unethical. So you got to stay there and do it and grind that shit out. And then maybe after 2 years of doing that, they've signed off on your hours and you pass the test, you get your license and you hang a shingle. Now, mind you, if you don't want to work in that clinic and that environment of chemical incarceration that I just explained, you can opt to be supervised by a private licensed professional. Now, the licensed professional has to be licensed in mental health counseling or social work, one of the two. Licensed clinical social worker cannot supervise a licensed mental health counselor, even though those degrees are the same. They can take classes and make it, but for the most part, directly they can't, and vice versa. It's fucked up, right? So what those people tend to do, because honestly, the licensed field is saturated. There's so many, many, many businesses are closed. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. I started a walk there. If you don't work in a clinic or you have, you get licensed. Now you're opening to hanging your shingle. But if now we've backed up to where if you're in the clinic, you're working under a supervisor, they're signing off on your hours. Now, if you don't work in a clinic, you work with a licensed person. Now, what these licensed people are doing are charging. They're charging registered mental health counselors who just spent 3 years getting a master's, who now got to spend the next 2 years making shit fucking money to try to get a license, who just spent God knows what on a fucking degree. And now these licensed people have the audacity to charge the registered mental health counselor per hour. I've seen them charge up to their own hourly rate, $150, $250 an hour to be supervised for an hour, which means you're going to do their work. They're going to watch you and they're going to pay you for it. One of the questions on the state test to get licensed actually says, does having a license mean that you are good at your practice? The answer is true or false. The answer is false, and that's the correct answer. Then why am I getting the fucking license? Oh, that's right, because you get paid and register mental health. Okay, yeah. So this is what awaits you. Now, let's say you get your license, you stayed within the clinic. Now you've got your license. You think they'll pay me now. No, you're probably going to be lucky if you're making 38. You put 4 or 5 years in a clinic, you may see 42, 45. And if you put enough years in, you may be the clinical director and make 60. That's what you got to look forward to if you get a $70,000, $50,000, $100,000 master's degree in mental health counseling or clinical social work. That's what they're not telling you in the fucking brochure. Now, that's if now you got to stay working in that clinic you just spent holy shit in. All right, going, what the fuck is happening? Whether it's addiction treatment, community mental health counselor centers, same idea, because it's all same conservative approach. Now, the licensure people, the states, they're quite conservative. So you have to practice within these very conservative notches. You got to be careful. Well, now let's back up to you going, well, I got my license. I'm hanging my shingle. And mind you, shout out to all the therapists that do this today, that are in the clinics, that give a fuck, that are kicking their patients' asses, that are staying up late nights, that are studying overtime, the ones that are in the trenches, shout out to you motherfuckers, for real. You don't get enough love. So shout out to those people. And there's nurses in that same trench that are doing the same shit. There's nurses within the psychiatric wards that fucking, they take the brunt of some shit too. So shout out to the ones that are in the trenches doing the shit, all right? I was losing my mind. I was losing my fucking mind. All right, so you hang your shingle. You're a licensed mental health counselor, a licensed social worker. Trust me, go the psychologist route if you can, okay? Dr. Parker Mott, shout out to you, by the way. Dr. Parker Mott's going to be on the show Friday night. Yeah, he's coming over to the cave Friday night. He's already sending me crazy topics he wants to talk about. So if you take any route, I would suggest going the psychologist route, maybe the PsyD route. That name helps too with the doctor shit, right? People tend to buy your books and shit, right? If you got initials, it's weird. But yeah, so if you go, I'd suggest that route. Insurance companies are paying them good still, et cetera. But LMHC, LCSW, hanging your shingle, you need marketing money, got to open your business. And let's get it straight, a lot of therapists are not business people. So it's difficult. So you're trying to work social media. You're trying to get your practice off the ground. Most of it comes through word of mouth. So hopefully you were kissing some doctor asses and getting some referrals from some people. Now, mind you, a lot of people are licensed out there offering what you're offering. Now you got to go through the paneling, right? You got to get insurance. You got to be able to accept insurance. Shout out to every counselor out there that went through the paneling process and the death squad fucking panels that rip your life inside out as you're trying to accept their shitty insurance. Shout out. So, and most of these insurances aren't paying out to the licensed clinical social worker, licensed mental health counselor very well. They don't do that. So it ranges, depends, right? It's an open spectrum, depends on what you're treating, how you're treating. So I get that, all right? I don't want to be fucking shot in my foot again because I'm generalizing, all right? But I'm telling you, I'm generalizing, okay? So good luck with the paneling process. So you get paneled, now they're sending you clients, you're busy as fuck all the time, but your payout is very small versus the work that you put in, $35 an hour on some payouts, $60 an hour at some payouts, and you have a master's degree. Now, when you combine that and you can only see 8 people in a given day, you see where you're kind of limited to growth. Now it's about trying to hire other counselors, et cetera. Did you really think about hanging your own shingle and having to hire 7 other counselors, or was it really your practice, you see? So what people stopped doing is taking insurance. They started just charging a flat rate and a fee. Anywhere from $60 an hour to $150. I've seen $250. It goes crazy. Some people charge a lot, right? There's 3 ways to charge. Little business tip for you. 3 ways to charge, right? Under the fence, through the fence, and over the fence. Price under the fence, I'm like Walmart, everyday low price. I price through the fence, I'm just priced like everybody else. I price over the fence, meaning I high price like that to induce quality. So mental health trainers try all that kind of idea. Or mental health trainers, listen to me. Wow, bam. So we do, but we all try that, right? So that's a mix. That's what you see the play. So they charge hourly rates, and a lot of these practitioners are worth it. A lot of these fucking people get down. You know, they know their shit. They can help you out, and they're limited to what their insurance company will allow them to practice with you on. You know, if a licensed person is taking insurance and they believe in something outside of the spectrum of what the conservative licensing boards believe in, well, you can't practice it with them. I mean, you can, but you risk things, right? So you have to practice and prove. We applied cognitive behavioral therapy. We did, these are our goals. These are what we met. These are what we applied. It gets so lost in tracking of the system because insurance wants to know what they're paying for that you lose sight of treating the fucking person. And then you're limited to applications of what you're proving and how you're working it. It's a saturated market to be a licensed person. And now let's mix in every life coach on the fucking planet. Let's mix in every Facebook, Twitter guru there is that's telling you and regurgitate. I call them regurgitators. Regurgitators are people that take other people's theories and ideas and all of a sudden have an epiphany and then put out there that they've had this epiphany and change the words a little bit. And all of a sudden they're fucking gurus, right? And you see it. And so when I talk about the state of mental health today, the same way I've been talking about the state of mental health for fucking 4 or 5 years now, from patient to practitioner, it's set up to fail. Because then if you're licensed and you're in that game and you're doing it, you can't say anything. Because if you do, you'll be blackballed. And like most people don't know, before I got home from LA, which I flew out the next day from LA from being on Joe Rogan, before I got on the plane in LA, I was fired from both of my fucking jobs, both of my therapy jobs. Believe that shit? I do. I walked away from the Willow. And it's so hard out there, right? I've been saying the same thing like I've said back then. Nobody sees it and nobody's talking about it. Well, they are now. Thank you. The best part I love to see is when someone like this that has the clout of Dr. Rhonda Patrick and the intelligence and the research that backs her shit up says something like, oh man, Joe, let me tell you a story. They widen the spectrums of the DSM-2 of depression. Well, doesn't that help out pharmacology and pharmaceutical companies? Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's been doing that for a long time. And what I said is the dope boys put on white jackets and moved into mental health facilities. Said that shit on Rogan. I've been saying that shit now. Chemical incarceration, man, whether it's addiction or whether it's mental health, what's the treatment? Here's the pill. Call me in the morning. You have a disease. Take this. Call me in the morning. So the state of mental health scared the fuck out of me. And I said, what do we do? Somebody's got to say some shit. Change something. Do something different. For me, my solution was opening that up to legalize fucking everything, treatment over jail. No, it's not a disease. Work on the trauma and the environment, reassociation and socializing. Work on the cognitive framing on the instruct. Do the work from the home environment. No inpatient, irrational place, because it's not true. 30 days where none of it's around you. This isn't true. Medical treatment you need when you're coming off certain things, I agree, but 3, 4, 5 days of detox. You can do detox within the home with medical supervision. This costs money. This I know, I get it. Doing in-home rehabilitation costs money, but it's more, and it's the same. It's way more fucking money than we're doing by having the same people repeat the same processes with the same fucking treatments, getting the same fucking results. But it's supposed to be something fucking different. And we put money into the same broken system and nobody, we rewrote the DSM. We rewrote it. We widened the fucking spectrum of everybody. We invented fucking diagnoses almost, and we spread those out on traits and severity levels. So we can say, you're kind of that, or you're really fucking this, or you're sort of this. Well, then you see the commercials. Then you go, that happens to me sometimes. But on this kind of level, the doctor confirms it and tell you it's more mild, more moderate. You say, I can get that. You start to believe the shit that happens to you, and it becomes the pill for the treatment, not the idea of our circumstance, our environment, our present thinking. My solutions, as people were saying, was looking at it fourfold, fivefold, not some cognitive approach, not some behavioral approach, not some cognitive behavioral approach, but a biological, behavioral, environmental, structural, biological especially. Look at all of those approaches. Work those all in something. Do it from their home. Rebuild the environments. Forget the diagnosis. Treat the person, not the fucking symptom. And when you think about it, addiction, the drug use, the overuse, this is symptoms. Depression, anxiety, they're fucking symptoms. I know they're diagnoses, but they're symptoms. You have feelings of depression. You have these things. Now, don't get it twisted. I understand there's the outliers of true diagnosing. I'm not waving off diagnosing. I'm not waving off the DSM. I'm not doing that. I've seen them. I've met those people. I've seen the people that truly have these definitions of certain diagnosis that match these criteriums. I'm not dissing that. Those out fucking liars exist. But it's not like we believe it to fucking exist. There are not that many fucking bipolar people. And nowadays, bipolar is now a reason to be on disability. Go into your local mental health practitioner, take their bipolar 10-20 questionnaire, talk to them for an hour and see how long it takes them to call you fucking bipolar. And understand that that's a diagnosis people are throwing around that has some serious fucking severity levels with it, man. And people toss this shit around because, here, I'm going to go back. Here's treatment. So in order to get accepted into inpatient dual diagnosis facility, you have to have a diagnosis for mental health. You have to. Otherwise, insurance won't accept you. You have to get approved. The intake meeting is not to see how fucked up you are. The intake meeting is this is why they're running your paperwork in the back to see if you got dough to pay for this shit or if you got government insurance to pay for it. And mind you, that little person who has not much experience most of the time, sometimes you're lucky and it's an experienced person, is talking to you for a while and she's waiting for that other person to come back in the room to go, yeah, he's got insurance. And we go, great. So we have to write down what's called an initial diagnosis. Generally not done by a professional or a licensed person to do such. That would cost more money. So they do your intake. They write your shit down. They give you some serious heavy diagnosis so they can admit you based on your insurance requirements. And then we all know as practitioners, you all fucking know this, all of you out there, you cannot treat the mental health disorder until you have treated the substance abuse. You fucking know that. We all know that. But what happens? No, you get admitted to a dual diagnosis facility. So we work on the mood disorder and personality disorder the same time we work on the substance disorder. Well, everything in training for the most part points to you got to get rid of the substances, get back down to baseline. And now let's start looking at the environment, the thinking, the biology, all of this stuff. We got to start looking at that. But no, they bring you in and they start telling you you're powerless. They start telling you you got a disease. Works for some people. Look, if I'm hitting on your cognitive dissonance and you start going, fuck that. Well, that's cool. But question self. I know what I saw. I know what I experienced both. I was a patient and I was a fucking practitioner. I saw it on both fucking sides. You know when I quit? The day I fucking walked out of there. Yeah, I'm going all the fuck in. The motherfucking director of this joint. Who just... you know, or hours earlier was helping finagle some patient around what my advice would be on what to do because he had days, was to discharge somebody that was in need of help, that was not ready, who was out of days, to a fucking tree in the middle of a parking lot. I quit that fucking day. I lost my shit. Fuck you motherfuckers. Terrible. Again, shout out to those that are in it. I know that feeling of being trapped. You may see what I see. You may have to do what I was doing. And it's difficult. It's difficult. But we need warriors like that out there. We need those people in the trenches. And I already talked about the nurses too. And there's good practitioners out there. Don't get me twisted. This isn't me saying all of this shit is terrible. This isn't me saying therapy is terrible. This isn't me attacking all of that. I'm pointing out that we have to look beyond what we know to work for some people and start to look at the things that don't work for the fucking majority of people. That's what I'm trying to point out. It works. Yes. Antidepressants, even Dr. Rhonda Patrick. Well, some antidepressants work on some people. You're damn right. Joe said it to you. Damn right. Some 12 steps works on people. You're damn fucking right. Somersaults work too for some people. You're damn right. I'm for whatever works. But when I was pointing out, they widened the DSM. They've done it on a major level, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, not just depression and not just in the DSM-2, Joe. I already told you on your show, brother, they widened this fucking spectrum for everybody. They widened those spectrums when they rewrote the DSM-5 and they changed how they fucking even did diagnosing. And the fucking chemical incarceration and the opiate addiction problem has spread equal to the states that have adopted the medical model, AKA chemical fucking incarceration, And the medical model of fucking mental health treatment is prescription for prescription after they change the laws. Follow it. The way you'll find the states is follow the states that change the laws that you could prescribe a narcotic for a narcotic. The biggest change in the Florida model, what they did, the physicians union forced that change that you could prescribe a narcotic to get someone off a narcotic, which makes what kind of fucking sense? In some places, again, all the generalist outliers, I get it. You'll comment, fuck you, it worked. I love Suboxone. I haven't done heroin in 5 years. I get good. You're a fucking outlier. You're the shit. I love you. You're living your cognitive rampage. Mwah. Love you, dog. But the truth is the majority of the people out there are failing at it. The system is failing them. The help that we are providing only leads to further chemical incarceration or actual fucking incarceration. That's where it fucking goes. That's where the majority of this fucking shit goes. The majority of that DSM says, here's a fucking pill because you match these criterion on some sort of subjective fucking level on a mild or a moderate or severe fucking scale. And that's kind of what we think. Well, when you go to the doctor and you say, my fucking arm hurts, and they x-ray your shit and they go, that shit's broken, and you see the crack, well, that's a fucking diagnosis. You have a broken fucking arm. We see it. It's right fucking there. Take me to the fucking doctor, do the x-ray, and show me where the fuck that I have bipolar. Now, point out symptomatically and over research shows that potentially this much fluid is over here. Matter of fact, somebody measure their dopamine in their brain for me. Somebody measure how they know how much dopamine they have. Somebody measure how it's growing. Give me exactly to the number. You have X amount of liters or whatever. Show me. Measure the dopamine, measure where it goes, how it goes, and then prove to me that where it's at and where it has proves that it, my point is it becomes subjective based on mild research, not proven where you see broken arm, diagnosis, broken fucking arm. It's subjective. You meet criteria. You match subjective notions, and the practitioners out there that interview somebody, hand them a questionnaire, listen for an hour, and throw a serious heavy diagnosis out there on somebody's life. You are an ethically fucking practicing, and fuck you. There, I say it for everybody out there that went to a doctor for 5 minutes, told their fucking story in 7 minutes, and the doctor said, well, take this fucking pill. Fuck you. And while I'm on this fucking rampage, any physician that is prescribing antidepressants that doesn't have psychological or psychiatric training, you are also practicing out of your scope of practice. Because you didn't take psychology classes. You didn't take diagnosing classes. You can't talk to somebody for 7.5 minutes or less on the average of most American visits with your family practitioner and come to the conclusion that someone is suffering from major depressive disorder enough to hand them an antidepressant that may fucking work. Refer them to a psychologist, goddammit. Refer them to the right fucking place. Don't start tossing out diagnoses that change lives and change people's minds, create self-fulfilling prophecies like bipolar and shit. Ask them what they're really going through. Ask them what trauma they've experienced. Ask them what is situational to the moment. Ask them what you're thinking. I'm not denying that diagnoses don't exist. I'm only pointing out the excessive overdiagnosing and the excessive extreme over fucking pilling. That's chemical incarceration. And it's not coming, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, just because of depression, Joe. It's not coming just because of one mental health spectrum that was widened in 1973. It's been widened ever fucking since. Diagnoses have been moved around based on bunk fucking research that paid for by pharmacology companies to enforce some idea that you are sick, that you need fixing, that something is fucking wrong with you. And man, I know there's outliers, but for the most part, man, don't believe when they tell you you're broken. Get into the shit. Joe, it's every spectrum, Joe. And I said it on your show years ago, and you know it. It's not just addiction, my brothers. It's fucking everything. It's bipolar. It's depression. It's everything, Dr. Rhonda Patrick. It's every single spectrum of mental health from diagnosis everywhere. This is how much that shit means to me, man. That's why I got into that shit, to fucking help people. And like I said, I didn't want to just be a complainer. I didn't just want to be somebody pointing out the bullshit. That's why I wrote this motherfucker. That's why I got fucking crazy. That's why I wrote on boards. I wish I could show you my phone and the pictures. And we got to find a new way. Wait a minute. We got to look at everybody. We got to look at the cognitive people. We got to look at the behavioral people. We got to look at the environmentalists. We got to look at the epigenetic people. We got to look at the biologists, man. We got to look at the scientists talking about, you know, nutrition and the food implications. We got to pull all this together. We got to look at trauma theory too. We got to look at it all. Pull that shit together. Make a full front change. That's what I'm screaming. That's what the cognitive rampage is. It's not about just pointing out all the corruption, all the shit that we know, and then pointing out bad people to where it's just about a choice. It's not about those stupid, small, little fucking details that everybody wants to talk about, because I know the devil is in the details, motherfucker. And if you want to talk about the details of what is and what isn't and what is like this and what isn't, well, then using the devil to talk to me in some way. That's where used car salesmen stay. Look at the 50,000 foot view. They've been doing this shit. This shit was planned this way. I know it sounds that shit, but when they noticed it makes money, how could you not? And even if it's not, it still fucking is. It's still broken. People are incarcerated when they need fucking help. You put them in jail, man. You take moms and dads away. You take sons and daughters away because you tell them they have a fucking disease, because maybe somewhere down the line, they believe some doctor that told them they had some sick mental illness and they went on disability and they stopped working. They lost self-worth. They didn't feel value anymore. And they believed everything the white coat fucking told them. And they took the same drugs and they found themselves medically fucking sick. They commit a crime and now they've broken up a family. They live with guilt, regret, and shame because the offer that we had was here. Trade that drug for this one. Yeah. So this is how I tried to find a way to fucking change it. A way to pull everyone together. To call out the bullshit. Because I lived the bullshit from both fucking sides. I lived it addicted to fucking shit. I did it addicted to fucking self-sabotage. I was addicted to everything the fuck else. And I did it from the practitioner side. The way they told me to, I'm doing it the way they told me not to do it. The way you can't do it. Not supposed to do it. Fuck, man. Why would I want to be a licensed therapist, you may ask me? Comment on the video of this guy doesn't have credentials. Go for it, motherfucker. Comment that shit, baby. And then go see your fucking doctor. See who kills you first. I get so upset, man. It fucking really gets me. I know what it's like to feel like nothing, you know, when you need help. And it feels like you're diseased, or it feels like something has to be wrong with me or biologically fucked in my head because I couldn't deal with those other facts of what some reality might be. Again, I'm not saying that outliers of these mental health diagnoses don't exist. I'm not saying that. And I want you to full-on conspiracy theorist myself here just because I'm pointing out a possibility of corruption that continues to proceed. It's moms, dads, daughters, sons, aunts and uncles don't fucking come home. And they went to treatment, right? They went to get help like Doc said. Yeah. Whatever, man. I've been wanting to tell that for a minute. I don't want to discourage anybody from getting into the helping field. If anything, I'd want this to inspire you, encourage you too, because you can find other ways to help. You can find other methods to reach people, to tell your story. But beware, if you choose this route, you will be transparent, and you better be prepared to tell your story. I wasn't prepared to tell my story that day on Joe Rogan. But I've been telling that shit right ever since. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you.